case, which is David Stewart v. the Attorney General.
May it please the court, my name is Theodore Cox.
Good morning and welcome.
Thank you very much. The expert affidavit by Professor Eadie was for the Mr. Stewart's presentation of his case, the key piece of evidence, the key information about the treatment of homosexuals in Jamaica in terms of background information, the society, the police, the government, and this court, the immigration judge, utterly failed to consider that evidence. And the Board of Immigration Appeals, on its own, made an independent weighing of that affidavit against other evidence that was in the record. Both are legal and constitutional errors. This case is a very unusual case of this type of a Convention Against Torture claim. We have in the record the fact of Mr. Stewart being chased from after a party, dancing with his gay partner.
Let's go to the first point you made. My understanding is that it's your position that the IJ failed to take into consideration the affidavit.
Yes, and aired to allow the telephonic testimonies or a video testimony, right?
On page 2, in the last paragraph of the IJ's finding, the IJ specifically stated that considered all of the evidence, even if not specifically discussed in the opinion, and then attached as one of the pieces of documents and evidence is the declaration by the expert.
Yes, which I submitted. That was my submission to the court, of course.
And so that was one of the pieces of evidence that she considered.
Well, that statement and using the word considered is the extent of it, but the whole point of an expert is a matter of DR and others' cases explained is it necessary to weigh the weight, the probative weight, the inferences, the social context. There are many parts. I mean, if the professor, it's hard to credit the judge's assertion that when the expert says that the police are guided by the anti-buggery laws and the laws of the church and are willing to turn a blind eye to attacks on homosexuals, and that it's more likely than not that David Stewart would be killed. I mean, these are directly the main issue in this case that the judge supposedly considered. But I think the court can see through this claim of consideration and look to the substance, that consideration means actually addressing some of the evidence, which did not at all happen here, except at the BIA level in the first instance.
Well, what about the following discussion by the IJ? Respondent has not shown, I'm on page 14 of the IJ's opinion, under the heading, Respondent is not eligible for relief under CAT. The IJ spends a lot of ink talking about at least what he found meaningful factually. Quote, the respondent argues the government's acceptance of homophobia and continued criminalization of homosexual activity constitutes acquiescence to torture. This court's not aware of a single case where institutionalized homophobia was found to constitute acquiescence. Furthermore, While the evidence in the record paints a picture of a society that is largely homophobic, it does not show that the government consents or is willfully blind to the murder or torture of members of the LGBT community. In fact, respondents' own evidence demonstrates the government is working to protect the LGBT community from physical violence. And then he goes on for, I don't know, a page and a half talking about what he found and apparently credited. Is this a question of he had a bunch of evidence, he credited some and discredited others, and you're just not happy what he highlighted?
Well,
I mean, he didn't have to, as a matter of law, single out each piece of evidence and comment about each piece, did he?
Right. That's black letter law. You don't have to comment about every evidence.
So what did he do that was so wrong as to amount to fatal error in his fact-finding process?
Well, not allowing the telephonic or video testimony of our main evidence, which is the witness, who can put all of this other evidence into context. If you have...
But he doesn't have to allow videotape testimony. He has the affidavit. He lists the affidavit.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is a discretionary whether or not to allow testimony, but the law and due process require that an applicant can make a case.
It's not discretionary to decline to allow videotape testimony?
Well, if it, as in this case, does prevent the applicant from making a case. Mr. Stewart himself was on a video. He wasn't even in the court, and there's no record or no... It can't be supposed that having the expert who's in Massachusetts and could not come...
Can I ask you about one of your legal issues? You complain that the BIA engaged in fact-finding. But, of course, in this case, the facts it found were the same as the facts the IJ found. So it can't really be a case of impermissible fact-finding in that sense. I mean, those cases all have to do with the BIA finding facts differently from the IJ, don't they?
Well, in the Zhou Hua Zhu case, the BIA arrogated to itself its authority to decide de novo country background conditions, which they did in this case as well. And it's not allowed. The IJ has to consider the evidence, including the
As I read the BIA case, they were saying that the IJ's decision was not erroneous, that it was consistent with facts that it observed. But that's not the same as finding different facts from the IJ, is it?
It didn't find different facts, but it said, okay. We find that these the facts that the IJ found are copious evidence that overrides the expert opinion, which is what our appeal was mainly concerned about. So making that comparison and weighing the evidence for in the first instance by the BIA is not permitted, and it must be done by the IJ, not
so
by the BIA.
You're assuming that the BIA did its own weighing of evidence, and that is error, even though it came out the same as the IJ.
Correct, because
all
the
right.
IJ has to
I see
to
your
do
argument.
It.
Let me ask the question this way and go back to what you said just a few moments ago about a purported violation of Stewart's rights because the IJ did not allow Eddie to testify by video.
Yes, Your Honor.
What is it that suggests that the IJ was required to allow the video in as opposed to reading the declaration, summary of the evidence?
Well, this
how did that amount to a violation of the liberty interest?
We had made two motions. We had made clear to the IJ how important her testimony was by two motions to request either telephonic or video evidence. Her affidavit itself says, I'm prepared to testify in detail about the risk Mr. Stewart faces in court.
I will concede that it would be wiser to have the video and hear the testimony live rather than take it in written form, but that isn't the thrust of my question. The question is whether or not this is error on the part of the IJ for not allowing the video. An immigration judge may conduct hearings, not shall, but may conduct hearings through a video conference to the same extent as he or she may conduct hearings in person. That's what the CFR says. And we've said there's certainly no constitutionally protected liberty interest in receiving the testimony in that form as opposed to in some other form. See, if he refused to consider it at all, I think you'd be dead right. But I don't see where the error is to be found in simply refusing to take the video in. What am I missing there?
Well, it is tied to the fact that the IJ did not in any articulable way consider the...
No. Now you've moved to another ground. We already started with that. Then you said he just did a crummy job with the evidence. But the point you were making just a moment ago was a procedural argument that it was error not to receive the video, not to receive the evidence in that form. And yes. I'm simply asking you, what is there that suggests that he was obliged to consider it by way of video rather than it was purely precatory? And if he chose to take it in written form, how is that fatal error? Right. And your answer to me then is, well, he did a crummy job.
No. Well, in addition, in this case, and I want the court to, you know, realize that this procedure in Lumpkin, Georgia, is at some distance from attorneys and experts and others, and that the you know, for a full and fair hearing, which the law, regulation, and due process require, would, I think, in a case like this, and under the facts of Mr. Stewart's case, require that the judge allow telephonic or video testimony on the relevant key point of the risk of torture or being killed in Jamaica, and especially in a case where his partner was killed a month after the partner's police officer brother died, where it's not like there's no issue here. It's not like it's overwhelmingly true that Mr. Stewart is safe. There is a real issue, and in this case, given
that... See, I agree with you that there's a real issue, but what you've got to show me is that what the IJ did in the fact-finding was so wrong, went beyond the goalposts, and that's what I'm having trouble with. Understanding, well, I understand you to say basically two things. One, procedurally, it was a violation not to allow the testimony in by video, but I see nothing that required him to allow it in that way. And two, you say, even having considered what came in written form, it was obviously error to reach the factual decision that he did. I hear you to say sort of both of those things, but what I want to know is whether there was any real difference between what the video showed and what otherwise came in written form from Eddie.
I don't know what the video showed. We didn't get the video.
Right, but what would a deposition have shown, video kind of deposition have shown, that you did not already present by way
right.
of written?
Well,
It might have been, you know, a picture may be worth 1,000 words and a video may be worth 1,000 pictures. But what I'm asking was there anything substantively different that he would have recounted that he didn't otherwise recount in the physical form and the written form?
Yes, because the weighing and the social connections of what is an expert? I mean, it goes to the question is what does expertise even mean in a case like this, and what is the value and importance of an expert opinion, and the connection between, you know, connecting the dots. So of course I can't complain if they just connect dots in a way that I don't like, but. The expert has to, I think it's important for courts to know that experts are important to connect the dots in a social context when different inferences can be drawn. And so the expert could talk about the concerns that the judge has about...
Right, of course, this wouldn't be the first time that an expert's testimony was presented in a court of law, mm-hmm. not live... but in written form, received and evaluated in written form.
Right, but in this case, they didn't discuss any conclusion or any statement or any fact or any assertion by the expert. They only said it was in the record, closed the case for the petitioner, for the applicant, and will only look at the government's evidence that shows that there is not such a risk, that the expert could have given cogent reasons why what happened to Mr. Stewart's partner would likely happen to him, which is what the expert concluded. And in an asylum and torture case, what happens to your loved ones or your partners is normally very probative evidence. And even despite that, the judge, the immigration judge, did not go beyond using the word consider in looking at that affidavit. And I really...
Let me make just the suggestion to you. You're happy to, if you want to eat into your rebuttal time, that's fine. But
okay,
we've given you 5 minutes for rebuttal. You've been over...
I'm sorry.
You've been answering our questions. You need not be sorry. But I'm just saying, if you're going to want to go on now, we're going to have you eat into your rebuttal.
Okay, I'll wait for...
thank you.
Now. Thank you.
May it please the court, Matthew George for the Attorney General. Here, the immigration judge's decision not to allow the expert's video testimony was well within her discretion. Both statutory and regulatory reasons support that. The immigration judge is allowed to conduct proceedings however she sees most fit, as would any fact finder, as would any district judge, determine how proceedings should be run. The Due Process Clause does not require a particular form of testimony. It simply requires the opportunity to be heard, and that happened here when the immigration judge accepted and considered the expert's written report. To that end, the expert judge said twice that she considered the report. She listed the report in her decision as an exhibit that she considered.
The immigration judge said, I considered the affidavit?
She didn't...
I didn't remember that.
She said she considered all evidence, even if she didn't specifically discuss it.
Okay.
And then she said...
But she does not cite the affidavit, as Judge Rustani is pointing out, right, specifically.
That's correct, Your Honor. As the board pointed out, she did not explicitly or expressly discuss the affidavit.
So I didn't know what she meant when you said she twice said she considered, quote, the report.
Well, on page record page 96, she says all evidence has been considered,
okay,
even if not explicitly
what
discussed.
What page is that in the actual judge's opinion? I've got it in front of me.
It's
I'm talking about the IJ.
I believe it's the second page, Your Honor. It's page 96 of the record.
At this proceeding, the applicant appeared by videotape.
I think that's accurate.
Oh, okay. All right.
By video.
All right. And is that, and other people appeared by video or in person? How is it going?
I believe his mother testified. I believe she was in person, but I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I know that I think there was a contingent of people that came down.
Right.
The
now, I think that the IJ said she had trouble with telephonic testimony, and I can understand that, because I don't like that myself, when I can't see the person. But she had used videotape for at least the applicant.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's okay, because it was a detention facility. I believe there were some issues with being detained. And Your Honor is correct about how the request went. First, there was a request for telephonic testimony. The immigration judge said she doesn't like telephonic testimony because it's difficult to determine who's actually on the phone.
Right.
Then there was a motion for the video testimony, and it said little more than, well, the expert would like to supplement the declaration.
Without saying what else would be in the supplement.
That is the extent of what that motion said. So the immigration judge said, you haven't shown good cause, and the affidavit is enough. And that's what she admitted into the record, and there's no dispute that was admitted.
So it's clear the IJ was aware of the affidavit, because she made a ruling on the videotape testimony and decided there was going to be nothing else.
Okay. Yes, Your Honor.
Wouldn't it have been wiser to allow the video?
Absolutely. I don't know.
For the life of me, I do not understand why you wouldn't take the expert in video where you could have an examination, a direct, a cross. If the court has a question, it could put it itself. It's very different from just having a raw record.
I agree, Your Honor. I don't know what was going through the immigration judge's head. I don't know if...
Is that a common practice that while the rule is precatory, it says may means they don't as a matter of course?
Not in my experience.
I'm beyond the record in asking that question, but it's sort of perplexed me because it's not the first time I've seen a circumstance where a video was available and they refused to use it.
It's not my experience. I think it's all across the board in cases that I've seen. I don't know that there's a general rule. I mean, I know this immigration judge sits in a detention facility, so I don't know if that plays into her thinking in terms of what witnesses to take, and I don't know if...
Well, I'm just talking about an expert in particular, given the centrality of an expert about the nature of conditions in, you know, in a foreign land.
I think it's all across the board, Your Honor.
Thank you.
What various judges may think. I believe I've seen cases that I've worked on where immigration judges have accepted telephonic testimony. So I know that sometimes does happen. It probably just comes down to individual judges in terms of what each judge wants to take and consider. But regardless, there's no obligation to take video testimony, certainly where the immigration judge here accepted the written declaration. And then sort of going beyond that, even if that were somehow a due process violation, which it's not, or a discretionary violation, which it's not, petitioners never said what evidence would the expert even have provided that's not in the written report. So what difference would it even make to have that expert testify? I know there, my opponent tried to come up with some reasons in his presentation, but that's never been presented either in the record or even in his brief of what the expert even would add to the discussion in a meaningful way, if sort of directly from the expert, other than counsel making representations about it. Turning to the board's decision in terms of the immigration judge's actual consideration of the expert's report, as I mentioned, the immigration judge listed it, said she's considered it even if she doesn't explicitly address it. The immigration judge then goes on to address a significant amount of the evidence, citing 9 particular examples from various, not just one singular report in the record, from various reports in the record, looking at a variety of different things, citing 9 different examples of what the police in Jamaica are doing, while also acknowledging that sort of 9 examples of positive things, acknowledging negative things, considering and weighing all of that together to reach her conclusion. That's reasoned consideration of the CAT claim in this case, and that's all she's required to do. Once she's done that, she doesn't need to explicitly address each particular piece of evidence or each particular claim, and that's what the court has said over and over in cases such as June and Tan, talking about the notion of reasoned consideration. And so when the board takes a look at it and says, yes, the immigration judge didn't explicitly or expressly discuss it, however, looking at the entirety of the record, all of the evidence, it's not going to make a difference to send it back to have the immigration judge explicitly consider it. And essentially, because she gave it reasoned consideration, because of all this other evidence in the record, it's not necessary for her to send it back. The board isn't making factual findings. It isn't overruling the immigration judge. It isn't saying the expert's declaration says he's going to be tortured, says he's not going to be tortured, or making an explicit finding. It's saying, looking at this record as a whole, the copious amount of evidence that the immigration judge cited in terms of supporting her decision, they're making the call that it's not going to make a difference. It's not a good use of judicial resources to send this back to have the immigration judge explicitly consider the expert's declaration. And that's all because she gave it reasoned consideration, because the board has looked at it a second time. All of that comports with what the court says is necessary to occur, and it doesn't violate due process in any sense, either what the immigration judge did or her decision not to explicitly or expressly consider that report. Then, as sort of a final matter, the final prong of any, if even if there was some due process violation, we get to the prejudice that petitioner must demonstrate. He's failed to do that, either in terms of the immigration judge's decision not to allow the video testimony, or in terms of the immigration judge's decision not to expressly or explicitly consider the report.
I saw a hint of something that might have benefited from some further explication, and that was something in the affidavit that said, under the new political situation, things weren't, they weren't making as many efforts to protect homosexuals as they were before. But my question to you is, was there any request to explicate the current political conditions since 2016? I mean, that's what I might like to have heard about, but if the council doesn't tell me, that's what they want to do.
I don't think any request has been made in that particular fashion. I know there are several statements from public officials in Jamaica that we cited in our brief about their feeling, their current, or as current as the record was at the time.
Right. So this was in 17, and I think some political change happened in 16. Okay. But there was no specific request to add more on that. Okay.
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Nothing that targeted that petitioner has ever made or ever said that, look at this particular piece of the report, that's what we want considered, anything of that nature.
Okay.
It's all just been this very generic, more, I guess, getting to, well, we wanted the video testimony, but we never say what the video testimony is going to add.
Right.
That's not already in the report.
Okay.
And it's a report that the immigration judge said she considered, and under the presumption of regularity, petitioners never showed that anything to suggest that the immigration judge didn't consider it, even though she didn't expressly or explicitly discuss it. And so because that decision to allow the video testimony was well within the immigration judge's discretion, that was not a violation. The immigration judge gave reasoned consideration to the claim, so her decision not to expressly or explicitly discuss the report is not a violation. And even if somehow any of that was a violation, petitioners failed to show any prejudice from it. Therefore, the court should dismiss this petition on the criminal alien bar grounds, unless there are any questions.
Anything further?
Nope.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cox, you have the last word, and you have reserved 5 minutes for your rebuttal.
I just want to briefly address this. You know, the CAT claim, it's a life or death decision. It's for the individual concerned, is of extreme importance, and the fine difference is whether you're 49% likely or 51% likely to suffer torture or be killed. So it's a case where any relevant information is of crucial importance in this case. I hope the court can clarify whether, when, and what circumstances that discretion should be properly exercised to accept testimony from electronic means. You know, the court has asked about.
You see, the problem that you have is we have already said. The failure to receive relief that is purely discretionary in nature does not amount to a deprivation of a liberty interest or due process. That's the problem. Where it's discretionary in nature, and plainly the CFR says this is discretionary in nature, the argument is a difficult one to accept unless the judge had refused to consider the evidence in any form. But that's not what you have here.
Discretionary. The CAT is not discretionary. The relief is not discretionary.
No, what is discretionary is whether or not to allow a video testimony at a hearing. That's expressly left to the discretion of the IJ by 8 CFR 1003.
Well, except that when there are due process concerns, and I have to say that, you know, this IJ denies asylum 97% of the time and denies electronic expert testimony 100% of the time. There's no way you can go to this court and ever get the testimony you want from any unless an expert can actually be present in person. And this is just not a fair proceeding, Your Honors. This is not an opportunity to present your case on a life and death issue of Kat. I think that not only did the BIA exercise on its own weighing of evidence, but that for people to have a fair proceeding and present evidence that they want to present, there must be the
hearing was conducted in D.C. I take it,
Lumpkin, Georgia,
and where was the expert located?
Amherst, Massachusetts.
Okay.
Well, if there are no further questions, I rest on my brief, Your Honor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both for your efforts. This court will be in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. Thank you.
All rise.